Members, please vote to signify the presence. All members voted. Secretary, please close the roll.
The roll shows all senators present this morning.
Will we stand for the invocation, please?
Father, your creation is diverse, showing richness and variety everywhere we look. Your creation's diversity is reflected in the people of Alaska, who are of so many cultures, colors, lifestyles, and ideas. Many of the measures before this body involve communication systems, highways, bridges, and other things which bring people together. Father, amid the diversity here present, strengthen the unity of the Senate and of all the people of Alaska so that, while retaining their differences, they may work in unity and in harmony. You live and reign forever and ever. Amen.
Senator Halford.
I move to ask unanimous consent for every spread on the journal.
Without objection, so ordered. Does the Secretary certify as the correctness of the Daily Journal?
I wish to certify as to the correctness of the Journal for the 122nd Legislative Day.
Senator Ray.
Move the Journal for the 122nd Legislative Day be approved as certified.
Without objection, so ordered. Are there guests for introduction this morning? Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, the gallery behind me is a classmate of mine from the University of Alaska and an assemblyman from Anchorage, Mr. Don Smith.
Senator Gilman.
Thank you, Mr. President. As a senator from South Anchorage, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce a constituent, Don Smith's daughter, Heather Smith. And Mr. President, also in the gallery behind me is the president of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly from Seward, Don McLeod.
Welcome you here this morning. Are there messages from the governor this morning?
There are no messages from the governor this morning, Mr. President.
There are messages from the House.
Message of May 18, the House passed the following and transmitted for consideration. House Bill number 29 by Representatives Martin, Flood, and Lindauer, an act relating to the verification of residency of candidates for certain public offices.
State Affairs Judiciary.
House Bill number 126 amended by Representatives Hurlburt and Cowdery, an act limiting the liability of aircraft owners or operators for personal injury or death to guest passengers.
Commerce Judiciary.
CS for House Bill number 182 financed by the Finance Committee, an act exempting participants in residential drug abuse and alcoholism treatment programs from Alaska's minimum wage provisions and providing for a wage scale.
Commerce, Labor, Finance.
CS for House Bill number 294, Transportation amended by the Transportation Committee, an act establishing an Alaska Toll Bridge and Causeway Authority and providing for an effective date.
Transportation Finance.
CS for House Bill number 295, financed by the Finance Committee, an act making special appropriations to the Alaska Toll Bridge and Causeway Authority for the design of Kinnickarm Crossing and for the operating expenses of the authority and providing for an effective date.
Transportation Finance.
House Bill number 411 by the Rules Committee, an act making a supplemental appropriation for the operation of the legislature and providing for an effective date.
Finance.
That was the message from the House today.
And note the quizzical look on the State Affairs Chairman. We have a transportation and state affairs combination responsibility that dates back to the time when the State Affairs handled the transportation matters. At this late in the session, I hesitate to put a bill in three committees, but I will do so if committees decide it's necessary. Of course. Are there communications?
Receipt of the Alaska Legislative Procedure Study final report submitted to the Joint Special Committee on Legislative Reform prepared by the National Conference of State Legislators May 15, 1983. This will be on file. That is the only communication.
Are the reports of standing committees?
The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considers Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 26, feasibility of creating local advisory boards. Senator Josephson, Chairman, and Senators Halford and Vic Fisher signed do pass. SCR 26 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
The Finance Committee considered Senate Bill Number 52, licensing of commercial fishing, and recommends that the Resources Committee substitute do pass. Signing do pass, Senators Bennett, Co-Chairman, Senators Ferguson, Sackett, Mulcahy, Josephson, Fakes, and Vic Fisher. SB 52 has no further referral.
Rules Committee for placement on the calendar.
The Finance Committee considered sponsor substitute for Senate Bill Number 174, employment preferences for state residents in construction contracts by the state or an agency of the state. And a majority of the committee recommends do pass. Signing do pass for Senators Bennett, Co-Chairman, Mulcahy, Josephson, Vic Fisher, Ferguson, and Sackett. Senator Fakes signed no recommendation. SSSB 174 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
The Finance Committee considered Senate Bill Number 265, permits issued for games of chance and contests of skill, and recommends that the State Affairs Committee substitute do pass with a new zero, with a new fiscal note. Signing do pass, Senator Bennett, Co-Chairman, Senators Ferguson, Josephson, Mulcahy, Fakes, Vic Fisher, and Sackett. SB 265 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
The Resources Committee considered Senate Bill Number 272, special appropriation for payment as a grant to the Municipality of Anchorage for expansion of the Ship Creek Treatment Plant and Phase 2 design and construction of the Akutna Water Project, and recommends that the Resources Committee substitute do pass. Signing do pass for Senators Berenkamp, Chairman, Vic Fisher, Sterdulewski, and Paul Fisher. Signing no recommendation for Senators Elias and Ziegler and Mulcahy. SB 272 has a further referral to Finance. The Resources Committee considered Senate Bill Number 285, sale of Cook Inlet royalty oil by the State of Alaska to the Tesoro Alaska Petroleum Company. Signing due pass for Senators Berenkamp, Chairman, Sterdulewski, Vic Fisher, Ziegler, and Paul Fisher. Senator Mulcahy signed no recommendation. SB 285 has a further referral to Community and Regional Affairs. The Resources Committee considered Senate Bill Number 268, sale of Prudhoe Bay royalty oil by the State of Alaska to the Tesoro Alaska Petroleum Company. With the majority due pass, signed Senator Berenkamp, Chairman, concurring Senator Sterdulewski, Vic Fisher, Ziegler, and Paul Fisher. Senator Mulcahy signed no recommendation. SB 268 has a further referral to Community and Regional Affairs. The Finance Committee considered House Concurrent Resolution Number 2, travel by senior citizens aboard vessels of the State Marine Highway System, and recommends that the State Affairs Senate Committee substitute do pass with the House Transportation Committee letter of intent. Senator Bennett, Co-Chairman, and Senators Josephson and Vic Fisher signed do pass, signing no recommendation for Senators Mulcahy, Fakes, Ferguson, and Sackett. HCR 2 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
The State Affairs Committee considered committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 18, State Affairs, displaying the flags of the United States of America and the State of Alaska, and recommends it be replaced with a Senate Committee substitute. Senator Vic Fisher, Chairman, and Senators Kelly and Sterdulewski signed do pass. House Concurrent Resolution 18 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
The State Affairs Committee considered CS for House Bill Number 6, Jude, driving a motor vehicle, and recommends be replaced with the Senate Committee substitute, signing due pass for Senators Vic Fisher, Chairman, Senator Kelly, and Sterdulewski. House Bill 6 has a further referral to Judiciary. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered House Bill Number 125, emergency closure days in response to a threat to a health or safety of students, and recommends do pass, signing Senator Joseph, Chairman, concurring Senators Halford and Vic Fisher. HB 125 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
The Judiciary Committee considered House Bill Number 195, Jude, permitting transfer of four-footed aircraft to Alaska Wing Civil Air Patrol, signing do pass for Senator Ray, Chairman, Senators Pettyjohn, and Eliason. Senator Ziegler signed no recommendation. House Bill 195 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered House Bill Number 196, Provisions of Adequate Housing for Public School Teachers in Rural Areas, and recommends do pass. Signed, Senator Josephson, Chairman, concurring Senators Halford and Vic Fisher. House Bill 196 has a further referral to Finance. The Finance Committee considered House Bill Number 202, Increasing the Liquor Tax, and recommends that the Judiciary Committee substitute do pass with an amendment. Signed, Senator Bennett, co-chairman, concurring Senators Josephson, Vic Fisher, Fakes, Ferguson, and Sackett. Senator Mulcahy signed no recommendation. House Bill 202 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
The Finance Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill Number 251, Hess, State Support for Education, and recommends it be replaced with the Senate Committee substitute with a new fiscal note and do pass. Signed, Senator Bennett, co-chairman, concurring Senators Ferguson, Mulcahy, Fakes, Josephson, Vic Fisher, and Sackett. House Bill 251 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
Those are the standing committee reports today.
Are there reports of special committees?
There are no special committee reports.
Takes us to the daily calendar. You have the floor, Senator Pettyjohn.
Mr. President, I would ask that we take up reconsideration of Senate Bill 215 at this time.
Reconsideration notice has been given. Secretary, read the bill in third reading.
CS for Senate Bill Number 215, Second Rules, an act authorizing the use of Alaska Permanent Fund income to pay longevity bonuses, amending the longevity bonus program and the Permanent Fund dividend distribution program, and providing for an effective date on reconsideration.
Bill is before you for discussion and debate. Senator Pettyjohn seeks the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. For those members who recall, yesterday I voiced my opposition to this bill and offered a potential alternative solution to the problem presented to the longevity bonus program by the Zobel decision. And it was essentially, I suppose, a legal opinion, and as a lawyer, I'm entitled to give legal opinions, I imagine, but like any other legal opinion issued by a politician, I suppose it's subject to question as to whether or not there is, it's a strictly legal analysis or one that has some kind of political implication. This debate, of course, is part of whether or not we should have an elected attorney general. We won't get into that. But after the debate, the senator from downtown Anchorage handed me a letter dated April 25, 1983, from the law offices of Birch, Horton, Bittner, Pestinger, and Anderson, and signed by special counsel to the Longevity Residency Committee, and that gentleman is John K. Tillinghast, a former member of the Attorney General's office. And I was very gratified to receive this this letter, Mr. Chairman, because we have an independent counsel who was employed by this body to investigate the legalities involved in approaching a solution to this problem. And at the close of his letter, he makes this statement. I personally do not believe that the grandfather option creates serious constitutional problems. Well, I was very gratified by that, so I was led to go back to the original 58-page report submitted by this gentleman and his law firm on this subject. And that report is entitled The Longevity Bonus Program Options Under the Vest Settlement, dated March 8, 1983. On page 57, it states, and I quote, this report closes with one of the simpler alternatives, opening the class of longevity bonus recipients to all elderly Alaskans with 1 year's residency and terminating the program for the future. Later on, he says, we believe that this option is constitutionally permissible. Now, Mr. President, I was a little upset, I suppose, yesterday by the fact that perhaps I'm overly sensitive, but I thought that my legal analysis was greeted with something bordering condescension. And in fact, I think there was a misstatement made by a member of the body, I'm sure unintentional, that special counsel for this committee had told the committee that it was not constitutionally permissible for the grandfather option. Of course, that was a misstatement. And in fact, the counsel said on two separate occasions in the report and the letter, it is constitutionally permissible. So for those members of the body that voted for this bill yesterday, I think you should all be aware there is an alternative. The alternative is to grandfather this program. And when we look at the rationale behind this program, and perhaps the senior members of this body can enlighten me if I'm incorrect, but it seems to me the rationale was that you were going to reward the long-time residents, the old-timers, the sourdoughs, the people that built this country, and that is why there was a 25-year residency requirement. With that gone, the rationale for the program, to me, is lost. We're letting everybody who's been in the state for 1 year at 65 years old take advantage of it. Now, just to repeat the policy arguments against this bill, is that it will reduce the longevity bonus payments, it will reduce permanent fund dividends, it opens up the general fund or the permanent fund to substantial liabilities. If we go the permanent fund route, we're simply taking permanent fund money and using it for essentially an operating expense and just leaving more general funds for expenditure by this legislature. It encourages a welfare class, an elderly welfare class, to come to this state. And with regard to the statements that this is entirely equitable because everybody's treated the same, that's 65. We all aren't going to reach 65, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, some of us are living lifestyles which probably are going to see us reach an earlier retirement age. So in that sense, it's unfair. And there's a lot of people and good Alaskans who prefer to spend their golden years in perhaps more temperate climates, and they wouldn't be eligible. And basically, this permanent fund and the earnings thereof belong to the people of this state, and I don't think the legislature should tell the people that the earnings that they're entitled to will not be available to them until they reach the age of 65. If they want to take this money and put it in a bank account or an annuity, that's their prerogative. So all in all, Mr. Chairman, just let me close by saying there is, independent of my legal analysis, there is a substantial basis for believing that we have an alternative to this bill. It's the grandfather option. I think it's vastly preferable on policy grounds, and I urge everyone to defeat this bill and take up the grandfather option when it becomes available. Thank you.
You have the floor, Senator Joseph.
Mr. President, yesterday I did say that John Tillinghast thought that the option proposed by Senator Pettyjohn was unconstitutional, and I am correct in that, as indicated by Mr. Tillinghast's letter to me of May 19, which I put on the senator's desk. The confusion, I think, is between one grandfathering option and another. The letter of April 25, and I did circulate that to Senator Pettyjohn because of his interest in the subject and his remarks yesterday. That letter refers to a proposal by Mark Sandberg, which would open up in fiscal year 1984, the longevity bonus program to everyone who has been here 1 year, not to the class that the senator was talking about. His grandfather option, as he explained it, and as Mr. Tilling asked, and I understood yesterday, was a great-grandfather proposal, which was to close the class as to those who were here when the program was initiated, not to open it to everybody here who has been here 1 year or more. Now, the letter from Mr. Tillinghast of April 25 covers a different proposal than the senator from South Anchorage made. And the letter of May 19 addresses the Pettyjohn proposal and concludes, and I read, if you look at the last sentence beginning in the case on page 1, in the case, and the word of is missing, but in the case of Senator Pettyjohn's proposal, the definition of the grandfather class would be as unconstitutional as the current legislation itself. Mr. President, there is no perfect legislation, and for those who have concern about their lifestyles, if we can induce them to change those lifestyles and start jogging and stop smoking, I'm all for that. Maybe that's another benefit of this wonderful bill that I hadn't mentioned yesterday. I hope that the Senate reiterates its decision. I'm glad this matter has been clarified. We cannot stand pat, and that is the proposal that the senator offered, in which special counsel, and he has spoken eloquently of special counsel's qualifications, says we may not do.
Senator Pettyjohn, Senator Ziegler, would you swear me into the bar before I continue this case? Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't think that the honorable senator from downtown Anchorage and I should engage in our legal discussions too much further. I just would note that about 2 minutes ago, I was handed a letter from Mr. Tillinghast, which curiously enough is dated today's date, suggesting that the council employed is certainly responsive to his employers. In any event, I refer to page 2 of his letter of April 25th, 1983, where he addresses the question of whether or not this grandfathering option is constitutional. And he says there are two problems with the proposal. And the first one is that grandfathering under the proposal outlined by Senator Josephson would create a constitutional problem. So it seems to me that the gentleman has got himself in a box. He's saying there's a constitutional problem if we do it one way, or there's a constitutional problem if we do it the other way, but by and large, there's no constitutional problem. I look forward to discussing the matter with Mr. Tillinghast, and perhaps I can suggest alternative counsel. But in any event, there's no question in my mind that there is a constitutional way to grandfather the longevity bonus program, and I think we should defeat the bill and adopt that proposal. Thank you.
Senator Joseph.
Mr. President, I really have to take exception to some implication that Mr. Tillinghast has somehow changed his story at my request. When I spoke to the body yesterday, I was referring to the testimony he gave to the Finance Committee in open session. And his letter of May 19 is consistent with that. When I circulated the letter to my dear friend, the gentleman from South Anchorage, I understood that he read it in a way that I felt was leading him astray, and I wanted to prevent his going astray. So I asked Mr. Tillinghast if I could have a document to avoid misinterpretation of the April 26 letter. And I find that document of May 19 is consistent with the oral testimony and consistent with the April 26 letter. And I need to say again that there is a huge legal distinction between a great-grandfathering clause, which covers the class of 1958, and a grandfathering clause that opens it up to everybody here for a year now and then closes the field. And that's the distinction that Mr. Tillinghast has made. I'm sure Mr. Tillinghast would welcome an opportunity to talk with and share views with the senator.
You have the floor, Senator Pettigrew.
I just want to say one more thing, Mr. President. I believe in the plain meaning of the English language. And when I read a statement that says, quote, "I personally do not believe that the grandfather option creates serious constitutional problems," I read that language and I think I understand what it means. And when I look at a report that says, quote, "This report closes with one of the simpler alternatives, opening the class of longevity bonus recipients to all elderly Alaskans with 1 year's residency and terminating the program for the future, we believe that this option is constitutionally permissible," I don't care what the gentleman writes in a letter dated this date, I'll go by the language that he wrote and these two documents, and I think that was his opinion, and it's my opinion as well. Thank you.
Senator Ray?
Well, Mr. President, I think that there's possibly something that's lost here, at least as I'm listening to it. It's my understanding that Mr. Tillinghast is talking about grandfathering clauses as a course of action, not one definitive one when he talks, when he made that statement in the paper or in the letter there. He's told me in his own handwriting, this was yesterday, I am his employer, and he told me that Pettijohn wants to grandfather only the existing 25-year recipients. You cannot, underlined, grandfather an unconstitutionally defined class. That's good enough for me, and I'm paying the guy to do it.
Senator Pettijohn has the floor.
Well, you're certainly getting your money's worth, Senator Ray. But I don't recall that was my proposal. As I recall my proposal, it was to allow, and we can go back and rag it around if necessary, but my proposal was that as of the effective date of the legislation which would amend the longevity bonus program, all residents of 1 year standing would be eligible for the program. Now, the gentleman says you can constitutionally grandfather. If he says that the method I have is subject to question, we'll sit down together and we'll figure out what he means and what is constitutional, and we'll get that before this body if that is agreeable to leadership. Thank you.
Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. President. After all the legalese, I think the fact still remains, and that's the facts that I'm voting on. This proposal will reduce the longevity bonus that a number of elderly Alaskans are depending on. It'll reduce funds available for permanent fund dividend, inflation proofing, or whatever we decide to do with it, and it'll release additional funds for spending by this legislature instead of giving them to the people of Alaska in some form or other.
Under A.
What the gentleman has forgotten to say is that what it will do, it will continue the longevity bonus program and not do away with it. And I think that's what all Alaskans want.
Are you ready for the question? Spirited and interesting debate. Question is, shall Senate Bill 215 pass the Senate? You may proceed to vote. Have all members voted this morning? Secretary, close the roll.
Roll shows 13 yeas, 6 nays, 1 absent.
Bill 215 has passed the Senate.
I don't have a
effective date. Yes.
Effective date, I believe.
Yes.
I would move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the passage of committee substitute for Senate Bill 215 second rules be considered the roll call on the effective date clause. Or I just move the effective date clause.
Senator Ray has moved that the effective date clause on Senate Bill 215 be adopted. You may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? If any member desire to change their vote, Secretary, close the roll.
The roll shows 16 yeas, 3 nays, 1 absent.
The effective date clause has been adopted. The next item on the daily calendar was held in second reading, as I remember it. Secretary of the Senate, many amendments pending. I think all amendments have now been typed and prepared in order. Secretary, read the bill by title.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 257, Judiciary, an act relating to standards of conduct of legislators and legislative employees and establishing a select committee on legislative ethics and providing for an effective date. Amendment Number 2 by Senator Fahrenkamp was moved and pending. Delete lines 24 to 29 on page 3.
Everyone has that amendment. Senator Fahrenkamp has moved the amendment. Do you wish to speak further to the amendment, Senator? The question is, it'll be a roll call vote. The question is, shall amendment two be adopted? You may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Any member desire to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll.
Roll shows 11 yeas, 8 nays, and 1 absent.
Amendment 2 was adopted. We'll be at ease. Secretary, read the next amendment.
Amendment Number 3 by Senator Fisher, page 2, line 11, delete, repeal, insert, supersede.
Mr. President, I do not wish to move this amendment.
Without objection, that amendment has been withdrawn. Renumber the amendments. As you are ready, Secretary, please read Amendment 3, Title 4 in our page.
Amendment Number 3 by Senator Fisher, page 4, line 1, following the word contracts, insert or leases. Page 4, lines 2 to 5, following the word contract, insert or lease.
You have the floor, Senator.
I'd like to move Amendment Number 4.
Ask unanimous consent.
We'll call it 3 because it is 3. Amendment Number 3 has been adopted by unanimous consent. Please proceed.
Mr. President, I'd like to withdraw what is listed as Amendment Number 5.
Without objection, that is withdrawn. Takes us to Amendment 4, Title 6. Secretary, read the amendment.
Amendment Number 4 by Senator Vic Fisher is page 5, lines 3 to 7, delete and insert, subsection D.
Senator Fisher, do you wish to move
the amendment? Mr. President, I move Amendment Number 4 and ask unanimous consent.
Yes.
Objection is noted. Senator Fisher has the floor.
Mr. President, what this proposed change does, and I might mention that the amendments I'm suggesting here were worked through by the State Affairs Committee. What this does is to make it clear that it applies to each state loan agency and it does not apply to each loan agency.
It also provides, rather than each agency printing a list of loans by legislators, that the list will be provided to and published in a supplemental journal, rather than each agency having to bother with this. I again move, ask unanimous consent.
There has been objection. Senator Pettyjohn has the floor.
Through the chair, Mr. President, I'm a little confused with the exception created on line 3 of the amendment, where the presiding officer of each house does not have his loans reported. I'd like to know the rationale.
Senator Fish, do you wish to respond to the...
There's a comma missing.
Senator Pettyjohn.
There's a comma missing, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President.
Place the comma.
Okay, comma after the word section.
Withdraw my objection.
Objections have been withdrawn to unanimous consent request for Amendment 4. Amendment 4 with the comma in place. Understood. Amendments adopted. Senator Fisher.
Mr. President, I wish to withdraw what's listed as Amendment Number 7.
Amendment 7 has been withdrawn. The next amendment will be Amendment 5. Secretary Reed.
Amendment Number 5, page 6, lines 14 and 15, delete subsection 4 and insert B.
Mr. President, I move Amendment Number 5.
Objections noted. Do you wish to speak to your amendment?
Just briefly, Mr. President, this is just a matter to clarify that there be a clear separation between legislators and lobbyists, and there's a definition of lobbyists given elsewhere. There's a definition of close economic association provided in the bill elsewhere, and this would preclude such close relations.
Senator Ray.
From Mr. President, with this is that if you and I were in business and you'd file for the legislature and was elected, and you ran a couple of times, and then I didn't want you to run anymore, I wanted you to stay home and take care of your business instead of the state's business, and we had the disagreement, then I could file as a lobbyist and come down here and force you either to resign or to sell your business. And I don't think that's what we want. As long as we do have a, if you have an association with a lobbyist in a financial matter, if you disclose that, that should be sufficient. And the people can make their identification through that. Well, I appreciate what the amendment maker is trying to do, but this is not the way to do it. We'll be at ease.
To withdraw Amendment Number 5.
Objection. Amendment 5 has been withdrawn. We have a new amendment, title Amendment 5.
Amendment Number 5, page 6, line 18. After a gift, insert having an aggregate value in excess of $100 from a person, and going on with page 6, line 19.
Senator Fisher, do you wish to move the amendment?
Mr. President. I'd like to divide this amendment there. There are several changes proposed here. First one is page 6, line 18, then page 6, line 19.
You wish to divide on each one of these?
Yeah, well, okay, Mr. Chairman, what I would like is for Amendment Number 5 to apply only to the second portion, to page 6, line 19.
Not to page 6, line 18?
Not to page 6, line 18.
Are you withdrawing that section?
I'm withdrawing that section and page and the page 3 and page 6 sections.
Those sections of the amendment are withdrawn. Will the Secretary of the Senate read in total the remaining amendment offered?
Amendment Number 5 would now be page 6, line 19, delete, if the gift was intended as a reward for an official action by the person, and insert, under circumstances in which it may reasonably be inferred that the gift is intended to influence the person in the performance of the duties of the person who is intended as a reward for an official action or inaction by the person.
Senate, Mr. State Affairs Chairman, do you have something to add to this?
This is simply a clarification where instead of the language being it was intended as a reward, because intent is very difficult to determine and prove, to substitute the language under circumstances in which it may reasonably be inferred that the gift is intended to. And that is something that would provide a standard that would be more subject to analysis and interpretation by the Ethics Committee.
Senator Josephson?
I think that this is a matter which was elaborately discussed in the committees and in the Judiciary Committee, and I believe that the problem was that under the language of the amendment, a gift could never be received from any source safely or confidently because of the possibility that there would be a claim of a reasonable or an assertion that there was a reasonable inference to be drawn that the person giving the gift intended to influence the duties. And I believe the committee wanted to have a standard where a person complaining about the gift, and the senator says it's a difficult test and it's meant to be a difficult test, could be shown to have intended to reward the official action or reward the person making the official action. The difference being that under the language that the senator has offered, the question isn't what was in the mind of the giver, but what someone might infer to be in the mind of the giver. And under the language in the bill as printed, the question is what was the actual intent of the giver. I think that's the difference, and I think that this was debated. I think several senators testified to this, if I'm not incorrect, and I therefore oppose the amendment.
Senator Chairperson, you've been speaking before.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I will agree with my colleague from downtown Anchorage, but what I think this amendment does is basically is what we have now under common law. It's the appearance or the inferred bad judgment or that some bribe or some potential illegal act is being taken care of. And what the committee wanted to do was to really, you have to prove that a gift was intended to influence official action. And I think if we adopt this amendment, we're at right where we are right now, without something specifically in the statute saying if there's no intent, then it's okay.
Mr. Ray?
President, this is one of those hard things that you can't really define in law correctly. If it may be reasonably inferred that the gift is intended to influence the person in the performance of the duties of the person, let's take something like the capital move. Suppose that my constituency wanted to reward me for 15 years of labor and said that I did a good job, and they wanted to send me to Hawaii for 2 weeks. This is the community of Juneau through the official action of the city assembly or the borough assembly. Now, is that some kind of bribe, or is that some kind of wrong action to take? The same thing is if counter that in the other language, or is intended as a reward for official action. Suppose Senator Fisher, because of his steady work on something that a group wanted to show their appreciation. The school board wanted to show their appreciation, and they wanted to give him a dictionary or perhaps a Mason's manual. This would disallow them to do it. And yet, it's for his official action and doing his work as a legislator. So here's the hard part. You got a rock and a hard spot, and there's no way that you can really do it properly unless you're leaving a loophole or you're open to criticism. And I would welcome anybody on this floor or anybody in the gallery who can come up with an answer better than what was written in the original bill.
Mr.
Senator Victor Fisher, and then Senator Fahrenkamp.
Mr. President, I may not give Senator Fahrenkamp a chance on this one, because I thought we had reached an understanding with the Judiciary Chairman that this substitution was okay. So far as I'm concerned, I'm ready to withdraw it, except to say that the way the language is written now, it probably would not even permit the University of Alaska to name a building after me in thanks for what I've done for them. Mr. President, I ask unanimous consent to withdraw Amendment Number 5.
Amendment Number 5 has been withdrawn without objection. Senator Ray?
Well, Mr. President, I certainly must apologize to the State Affairs Chairman, because I didn't take the time right then. I was still looking for that horse that Senator Pettijohn let loose. So I want to extend my apologies to you, Senator.
Senator Ziegler, give your building back.
I was thinking it's easy enough for Senator Ray to talk the way he's been talking. He already has a building named after him.
The next item on the... Next item before us, Secretary Sen.
Amendment Number 5 is now page 7, lines 7 through 15. Delete entire section and insert subsection ABCDE.
You have the floor, Senator.
Let's skip that one. Let's
you withdraw that amendment.
Mr. President, I withdraw that one, and let's move to the one that was originally marked Amendment Number 11. And on that one, I will move only subsection 120.
Secretary, will you read the amendment? It is Amendment 5, I believe, and it's the first section, section 2460-120. It's just the very first portion, retaliation. I think everybody knows you don't have to read it. Motion is before us. You have the floor, Senator.
I'd like to move Amendment Number 5 with one minor change, that at the end of the first line in the proposed amendment, that the language be changed to read retaliation for filing a valid ethics complaint.
I believe that's...
And ask unanimous.
Well, everyone has the form before them, so the Secretary of the Senate would read that correctly, retaliation for filing a valid ethics complaint. Would you please read that?
Page 7, line 27, section 2460-120, retaliation. Retaliation for filing a valid ethics complaint or for providing truthful testimony to the committee or to a publicly constituted investigatory body constitutes a violation of legislative ethics.
The motion's before us. You have the floor, Senator Gilman.
Mr. President, let's think this one through for just a minute. If somebody files a complaint on basis of information that they have, they think it's correct, but it turns out it isn't valid, then what we're writing in here is that there can be a retaliation.
That probably would be. Senator Ray?
Well, Mr. President, how are you going to define what is retaliation or what is true retaliation and what might be a course of events that occur? So at least we're putting it in that we hopefully that they will file a valid one, and it's a nebulous amendment, and it's one that you couldn't identify, and that's why I have no objection to it.
Senator Sackett has the floor.
Mr. President, to Senator Fisher, is employment of former members and employees also part of that amendment?
Senator, you have the floor.
No, that is not part of the amendment.
Oh, is that a,
just
that
the first section?
Oh, okay.
Senator Joseph has the floor.
Mr. President, I think Senator Gilman has raised a good point. I'm not sure, truth to tell, that retaliation is ever a worthy motive, but if it is, it should rest upon the good faith of the complaint. And I would suggest that the language read, retaliation for filing in good faith an ethics complaint or for providing truthful testimony and so forth. That would mean that the retaliation would be permissible if there was a malicious evil intent surrounding the complaint, but not if there was a genuine belief that the complaint should be brought.
There is no objection, although this is unusual. If there is no objection, the motion is to amend the amendment, delete a valid, that is for retaliation. Senator Gilman has the floor.
Mr. President, I have no objection to that language. I have a objection to the entire section, but I'll wait for that language to be adopted.
There is a motion for unanimous consent for adoption of that, Senator Fisher. Senator Ray. The amendment is adopted. Senator Gilman, you have the floor.
What we're doing here is writing into the law a situation where we are condoning and saying that retaliation is possible under the law. Well, retaliation is a big topic. It can be retaliation from lots of things. But what we're saying here is that if it is not a good faith, frivolous complaint that is filed, then if there is retaliation, that is all right for under legislative ethics. We're saying, we're building into the law, that retaliation is part of our legislative ethics.
Senator Fahrenkamp is seeking the floor.
Mr. President, this amendment bothers me as well. How do we interpret, and is there a definition of retaliation? For instance, if one of my colleagues were to file against me a good faith ethics question, and then they have a bill on the floor that I vote against, is that retaliation?
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, this opens a keg of worms. It's absolutely unnecessary.
Further debate, Senator Ray?
I don't know. I'm just, as a layman, I'm just supposing that possibly this could be a legal grounds for a court suit, to provide somebody with a court suit or deny them a court suit, one or the other.
Questions before us, Senator Helfert?
Thank you, Mr. President. This whole section raises a lot of interesting questions. I would say that if it just said retaliation for any official action in support of legislation or allocation of funds or anything else constitutes a violation of legislative ethics, it'd probably be what the people would like to say, but I think it would probably create a lot of problems in the operation of this body.
The question before you would be roll call vote. The question is the amendment just proposed by Senator Fisher.
Ask one question.
You have the floor, Senator.
I have another problem, which is that I don't think we use the term legislative ethics as such in this bill. We talk about conflicts of interest. And I don't know what is meant by the author in terms of whether this creates a conflict of interest and you can get into the advisory opinion machinery, or whether it's simply a legislative ethic issue that is going to be, under another bill, part of the uniform rules preface without sanction, whether it's a standard of conduct like the Boy Scout Oath or the Girl Scout Oath, or whether it is a substantive wrong for which a member could be disciplined. If someone could explain that to me, I'd be more comfortable.
Senator Sackett has a question. We'll be at ease.
Mr. President, for the sake of love, peace, and tranquility, I move once more to withdraw my amendment number 5.
Senator Alfred?
Thank you, Mr. President. Before the amendment is withdrawn, I just wonder if someone could define what retaliation is. I wonder if that means an office in the Barron's building with bunk desks or no staff or removal of district projects from the governor's budget, or what is retaliation?
Senator Ray?
Retaliation, like beauty, is in the eye of the beholder and the dispenser.
That objection is withdrawn. You have the floor?
Retaliation is like
obscenity. I only know it when I see it.
Are there further amendments? The continuing amendment 5.
Amendment number 5 by Senator Vic Fisher, page 9, line 12, following standards, insert.
You may have the floor, Senator Fisher.
I move Amendment Number 5 and ask unanimous consent.
Without objection, Amendment 5 is adopted.
Amendment Number 6 by Senator Kelly. It's labeled 13.
Amendment 6 is labeled 13. Senator Kelly.
President, I would move the amendment but not ask unanimous consent.
Without objection.
Mr. President, I would like to move to an amendment to the amendment, which would be on page 13, line 10, which would delete section A, which is the definition.
We haven't moved the amendment yet, have we?
I think I did.
Did you move the amendment 13?
What we're doing, what I'm trying to accomplish, Mr. President, is clean up that section that Senator Moss pointed out yesterday, where it's kind of ambiguous, where it says to a person employed by a member of the legislature, and just delete some of that language so it would read a member of the legislature or an employee of the legislature. And then the deletion on page 13 would be deleting the definition of a member of the legislature. And I think it cleans up the language. Everybody understands exactly what it means.
Senator Kelly, is your statement that the amendment before us is the motion you have made? Did you make a subsequent motion also?
No, Mr. President, I would move to amend the amendment.
Move to amend the amendment, and that amendment to the amendment is?
It deletes the definition of, on page 13, line 10, it deletes the definition of a person employed by a member of the legislature, so that what it reads is a member of the legislature or an employee of the legislature. I think it clears up the language.
Senator Ray?
Just a technical question through the chair. Is it the senator's understanding that an employee of an agency, that all state or all legislative employees are members of the Legislative Affairs Agency?
You have the floor, Senator Kelly.
If you're employed by any of the legislative, if you're getting a paycheck from the Legislative Affairs Agency, then you're an employee of the legislature.
Senator Ray.
We have the Legislative Affairs Agency, and we'd know it for sure then.
Do we stand at ease, prepare that amendment?
Back order.
Before this body is the amendment. That is the amendment to the amendment to which you're asking unanimous consent. Secretary, explain the amendment to the amendment.
The way I understand the amendment to the amendment is on page 13, line 10 through 16, change person employed by a member of the legislature means a legislator or an employee of the legislature.
There's no objection. The amendment to the amendment is carried.
President.
Senator Kelly.
I don't know if I understood that. The amendment to the amendment is simply to delete the section A on page 13, which is a definition section. We no longer need it because on page 1 we're changing the language. Two, this chapter applies to a member of the legislature and to a an employee of the legislature.
The amendment just amends that section on page 13, is that right?
No.
It deletes it, deletes the whole section.
I think we shall stand at ease. Short recess here. Before us, we have an amendment proposed by Senator Kelly, an amendment to the amendment that was not defined in writing.
President.
Senator Kelly.
I withdraw the motion,
and we'll have the amendment copied and redistributed.
Motion has been withdrawn to move the amendment to the amendment, or the amendment to the amendment and the amendment.
And I would also move to withdraw the amendment.
Amendment at this time are withdrawn for this period. Senator, you have the floor, Senator Ferguson.
Mr. President, I ask the unanimous consent to be excused from the call of the Senate from 11:40 on through the rest of the day.
No objection. You have the floor, Senator Moss.
President, I guess you might say this is to the amendments that's been made and withdrawn and so forth on a person employed, et cetera. I think it applies to the things that we've just been talking about. I might point out line 27, it says to a person employed. I brought this up yesterday that I was concerned about anyone working for a legislator other than those people who work for him in the legislature.
Senator Moss, that whole amendment has been withdrawn temporarily.
Well, I just wanted to see, maybe make another point on this thing.
You have the floor, Senator Moss, of the will of the Senate.
Page 2, line 7, it says, a person employed by a member of the legislature does not apply to them. That makes it, somehow or other, we're going to have to amend that, Mr. President. I just wanted to bring that out.
Thank you, Senator Moss. Senator Ray?
I'd like to call attention to the page 13, line 10. Person employed by a member of the legislature means a person who is employed by an individual legislator or by a legislative body other than an agency the legislature established under AS so-and-so. You have it in the definition section. Takes care of the whole problem, I believe.
Senator Gilman, even though this motion, this amendment has been withdrawn, we are debating it for possible further amendments. You have the floor, Senator Gilman.
But, Mr. President, I respectfully disagree with the last speaker. It says a person who is employed by an individual legislator. That could be anybody. Anywhere.
Well, you have the floor because we're going to come back to this.
Mr. President, the last language in the phrase, whose duties include assistance to a legislator or a legislative body in the performance of legislative functions, I think is meant to modify the whole clause. But while I have the floor, Mr. President, I would, in order to debate a matter that I think has some significance, I would move to rescind our adoption of the amendment at page 9, line 12, permitting the committee to extend the period for 30 days by vote of a majority, if I could speak to that.
You're returning to the motion that was defeated yesterday, and you moved to rescind?
No. What did you just state?
We adopted it today unanimously, and I apologize that I was not alert at the moment.
Motion is to rescind. That's right. Our action and adoption. You have the floor.
This amendment allows the committee, which renders advisory opinions at the request of a legislator, to extend the time to do its work from 30 days for an additional 30 days. And I think it is an undesirable amendment for two reasons. First, the situation would arise when a legislator is invited to participate in a limited partnership or a stock issue or some other business transaction, but wants guidance as to if or not that investment or that transaction would be a violation of the conflict of interest laws. And the 30-day provision is designed to give the legislator either an answer up or down or permission because of the failure of the committee to render a decision. And if we let that issue dangle out there, in many cases, the opportunity, the business opportunity, would be lost and the issue will be moot by the time the individual gets around. That's one objection, gets an answer. The second thing is that I have some concern that the matter could be used in a political sense to the detriment of a legislator unfairly. For example, in the course of a campaign season, as we approach a campaign, a question may arise. The legislator may decide to seek an advisory opinion so that the legislator can go to the public and say, I either goofed and made a mistake or I have been exonerated or the committee failed to address the matter as required by law. And instead of that, there's a twisting in the wind effect in which the committee just dangles the individual out there for as long as 60 days. So I think that the deadline of 30 days served two good purposes, and I think that either the committee should answer the question or the legislator should be free to go his or her way and assume that that the matter is sanctioned.
Question is to return so that we may rescind. You have the floor.
I don't know. I don't care about rescinding, but dealing with the substance of it. The State Affairs Committee approved this language principally because it was deemed that there may be circumstances where a case is complex, where further investigation is required, where it was simply necessary to pursue the matter further, where the choice would be to, in effect, approve or disapprove. And in the circumstances that Senator Josephson is talking about, the committee might end up disapproving a given decision or a given, you know, saying this is a conflict, rendering a negative advisory opinion simply because they've run out of time to provide an intelligent opinion. This is a very minor escape valve, and I would assume would be exercised very judiciously. It's a kind of a provision that exists in most, for most bodies, and it seems very reasonable here. I think more people will get hurt if this kind of a provision is not adopted, if this kind of an approach is not available to the Ethics Committee, than if we just have doomsday approach, and then when in doubt, the Commission is liable to rule against a member.
There have been several approaches to rescinding taken over the years in both bodies. Presume that we will first move to rescind, and that will be a yes or no, and then move the motion. The question is, shall we rescind our action in adopting Amendment 5? You may proceed to vote. All members voted. Does any member desire to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll.
The roll shows 11 yeas, 7 nays, 1 excused, and 1 absent.
The question before us, the question is, shall we adopt Amendment 5? You may proceed to vote. On the adoption of Amendment 5. It brought it before us in this form. All members voted. Does any member desire to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll. Oh, Senator Halford desires to change his vote. Have you been recorded, Senator? You may close the roll.
The roll shows 5 yeas, 13 nays, 1 excused, and 1 absent.
5-5.
Yeah, I have that one.
Amendment 5 has been defeated. The next amendment.
I believe this is amendment number 6 to replace the number 6 by Senator Kelly. Is that right, Senator Kelly? Page 1, line 27. It's being distributed now.
All right. Well, is there a copy on every member's desk? Maybe I have one. Thank you. Senate, come back to order. Senator Kelly, would you move the motion, the amendment?
Mr. President, I would move the amendment.
Amendment number 6, I suppose, interestingly enough, doesn't matter, an amendment number 6.
Mr. President, the
other floor.
Language now reads, this chapter applies to a member of the legislature and to a permanent or temporary employee of an agency of the legislature. And then we delete the definition section in the back page. And on the second page, it reads, a person employed by the legislature.
Unanimous consent's been asked. Without objection, Amendment 6 has been adopted. Secretary, read the next amendment.
Amendment number 7 by Senator Kelly, page 4, line 4, after less, add comma, and insert.
Senator Kelly.
The amendment, but I won't ask unanimous consent.
Unanimous consent's been asked. Without objection, amendment has been adopted. Are there further amendments?
Amendment number 8 by Senator Kelly. Page 6, line 23, after the word section, add a comma and insert, nor are political contributions received and reported under AS 151340.
Senator Kelly.
So I'll move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Without objection, amendment's adopted. Are there further amendments?
I have an amendment to amendment number 1, which was by Senator Josephson and failed yesterday.
An amendment to an amendment that failed? Is that what we're telling us? Senator Halford, you have the floor. I don't think we should move the amendment without bringing the other one before us, right? You have the floor, Senator.
Mr. President, I move that we rescind our action in failing to adopt amendment number one as offered yesterday. And there is an amendment to amendment number one, which will be offered after the taking of the rescinding action.
The question before us is, shall we rescind our action? It brings the bill before us. You may proceed. Senator Ray, do you speak to the rescinding motion?
This is the one that the Josephson amendment that failed yesterday?
Yes.
Thank you.
The question is, shall we rescind our action? You may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll. If we rescinded our action, the appropriate question then before us would be to move the amendment. Senator Ray.
One.
Yes. Amendment is before us. Senator Pettyjohn.
Mr. President, I move the amendment to amendment number one.
Amendment to the amendment has been moved. It's in order. You have the floor.
What this accomplishes is it lowers the term of public members from 4 years to two, and it further states that their term is only 2 years and cannot be extended by a failure of succession, so to speak. In other words, if they're on 2 years, and once the 2 years is up, they're no longer a member, regardless of whether or not a replacement has been duly appointed and qualified. The rationale behind the amendment is that these individuals, the public members of this commission, have the potential to have a great deal of impact, influence, and power over the members of this legislature, and they should be subjected to a fairly frequent review of their conduct. And I think a four-year term is excessive. I urge the amendment.
Senator Ray?
Amendment? I think this proves the flaw in the public membership. Already somebody's afraid that the public member is going to be on there too long. You aren't even giving them enough time to acquaint themselves with it. It would seem to me that if you want public members on there, you should at least give them an opportunity to understand the legislative process and be able to understand what truly is a conflict of interest and not just an inference of one. I would object to this amendment for no other reason than you have to have continuity on something that's as important as this committee. At least you'd have to have continuity on it.
Senator Joseph.
President, as I understand the amendment, it would not prohibit continuity. That is, after 2 years of experience with an individual, the reappointment could occur.
Senator Ray, that is the intent.
See to that, Mr. President, as there'll be a different speaker and a different president than, most of the time, particularly after this session will be over.
By unanimous consent. You have the floor.
Mr. President, point of information, unless I'm looking at the wrong copy, my language states a commission member may not serve more than one full term. So this would be commission member only serves one two-year term.
Is that the intention of the amendment to the amendment? Yes. Senator Pettyjohn?
Mr. President.
You have the floor, Senator.
I made a mistake of the journal. Please note that.
Correct. The question before us is, shall the amendment to the amendment be adopted? You may proceed to vote. All members voted. Does any member wish to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll.
The roll shows 8 yeas, 10 nays, 1 excused, 1 absent.
Amendment to the amendment has failed. The amendment is before us. You pose the question. The question is, shall the amendment be adopted? You may proceed to vote. All members voted. Have all members voted? Does any member desire to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll.
The roll shows 9 yeas, 9 nays, 1 excused, and 1 absent.
amendment failed. Are there further amendments?
There are no other amendments.
The absence of further amendments, Senator
Mr.
Ziegler.
President, I have an amendment that I forgot to distribute. Do we stand at ease and have that done now, sir?
Yes. Senator Ziegler has an amendment. It's amendment, what is the number? 8?
I would
number
have no
nine.
Idea. Number 9, all right.
Senator Ziegler has the floor.
I would move the adoption of the amendment, Mr. President. Bear with me, if you would, briefly. You know, perhaps, all joking aside, if we all subscribe to the 5 points or precepts set forth in the proposed amendment, we'd have no need for the type of legislation with which we're confronted today and with which we've been working for 2 days. It's not exactly tongue-in-cheek, but I intend to withdraw it in just a moment. But the point I really seek to make by submitting this amendment is simply that you get in a very, very dark and murky area when you endeavor to legislate ethics and morality. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm saying it certainly is complex. And we've seen what's been happening the last 2 days, and I don't know about the final work product, but I guess we'll get a vote on that before we go. So anyhow, I move and ask unanimous consent to withdraw the amendment number 9.
Point. Amendment's withdrawn. Are there further amendments? Thank you, Senator. It's a good point. Senator Ray.
If there are no other amendments, Mr. President, I would move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for Senate Bill 257, Judiciary, as amended, be considered engrossed, advanced, third reading, and placed in final passage.
Objection so ordered. Secretary, read the bill.
CS for Senate Bill number 257, Judiciary, amended, an act relating to standards of conduct of legislators and legislative employees in establishing a select committee on legislative ethics and providing for an effective date.
The bill is before you for discussion and debate. Senator Moss has the floor.
Mr. President, I think this is probably an unnecessary bill. Most interesting document I found on my desk this morning. It was written on December the 3rd, 1982. It had to do with conflict of interest. It was to Governor Hammond from the Attorney General's office. One of the main things that I noticed in this opinion that they had, they said, by this opinion, we hope to make state officers and employees aware of an ethical code which is not in the Alaska statutes, but which are in force in Alaska, the common law. Unless and until the legislature puts a different body of enacted law in its place, the common law of conflict of interest is declared by the court that prescribes the standards of conduct which must be followed by all state officers, Mr. President, and employees. The common law provides generally that public officers and employees are trustees of the people. It goes on, it says, first may a legislator or his or her company contract with the state to provide the state with goods and services. The answer is no. That's common law. There's a number of most interesting things. I don't know who placed this on my desk, but for the very reason that I see these points that's been made in this statutes and principles of common law, I think we've got everything on the books that we need. I might point out page 11 in the document. It says most conflicts of interest situations in Alaska are covered not by statute but by common law. Judge Wickersham described common law in a couple of cases there. And the common law includes those principles, usages, and rules of action applicable to the government and security of person and property which do not rest for their authority on any express or positive declaration of the will of the legislature. Basically, I think, Mr. President, before we pass that, well, I'll say it, abomination that we're looking at this morning, we should continue to live with the common law. It's a law that people like myself can understand, common people. I'm not a member of the bar, so consequently, some of this stuff here, and I've made several other comments about this particular bill here that I do have great difficulty with. It says on page 2, it repeals the provision of common law relating to legislative conflict of interest that may apply to a member of the legislature. I'm opposed to that, Mr. President. I'd like to see it stay in. I hope this body will see fit to turn this bill back, and perhaps one day we can come up with one that we can all live with.
Senator Josephson.
Mr. President.
Right down the line.
the members have on their desks, or in their desks, the Alaska statutes, and in Title I, Section 10010, there is a provision in our statutes that says that so much of the common law, not inconsistent with the Constitution of the State of Alaska or the Constitution of the United States, or with any law passed by the legislature, is the rule of decision in this case. And then, Mr. President, there are some headnotes from Alaska cases defining what the common law is. And in the case of Howarth against Pfeiffer in 1968, our Supreme Court said, and I'm reading from the headnote, the common law is not a rigid and arbitrary code, crystallized and immutable. Rather, it is flexible and adapts itself to changing conditions. And in another case, Serena against Buckaloo, it is the task of the Supreme Court of Alaska to explicate the common law, which will apply in situations not dealing with a constitutional question or statutory interpretations unless and until the Alaska legislature acts to modify it. The common law, in another case, is but the accumulated expressions of the various judicial tribunals and their efforts to ascertain what is right and just. Now, Mr. President, if we want to live with that and allow the Attorney General to comb through the case law, not only in Alaska, where there is no court decision in Alaska that's applicable, and we don't have very much precedent in this new state, we want him to comb through all that and come back and make decisions that affect our lives and our careers and the careers and lives of those who aspire to legislative office, because we like the common law, we can do that. Or if we want to take an opportunity to try to create some certainty where certainty does not exist, so we have clearer standards, we can do that. I, for one, don't presume or don't desire to leave this matter in the wisdom of this Attorney General or the next Attorney General or the one after. I believe that the public expects us to handle this problem. We are entitled to certainty. We are part-time officials. I think the administration had promised to bring down a conflict of interest bill affecting the executive branch, as Senator Moss said. They haven't done so. I think that's regrettable. They ought to do it. They ought to get it before us, and we ought to legislate that too. But we're doing for our branch of government the right thing, and I think we should pass this bill. It's not a perfect bill. I offered an amendment that I thought was constructive. The collective wisdom of this body was that it was not constructive. That fight can be waged another day, and we should move forward with what we've got. It is a step forward. It is the first time in the history of Alaska that the state legislature or a body of the state legislature has made such a comprehensive effort to address the problem of conflicts of interest. That's an achievement that we ought to take back to our constituents and talk about. And if our constituents tell us we need further changes, we should consider them in the next session or future sessions. But it's a start. And I commend all of those, and particularly the chairman of the Rules Committee, who led the Joint Committee, and the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and the chairman of the State Affairs Committee, Senator Fisher, because all of them had a contribution and a hand in doing this. I hope the House will act expeditiously, and I think the public wants this bill, and I hope it is enacted.
Senator Patty John.
There is a famous legal scholar of the last century, I believe it was Bentham, that said that the common law treats society the way the man treats his dog. You just beat him over the head until he gets the message. Common law, the definition of it, to be concise, is judge-made law. It's the law that isn't in statutes. It's one that's made by judges and is subject to judicial interpretation. The purpose of this bill, as I see it, and the reason I'm going to vote for it, is that I don't want to be confused or unsure about what I can and cannot do, and in the common law, the only way you find out is to go to court. I don't want to have to go to court. Thank you.
Alfred?
Thank you, Mr. President. Of course, some people don't hold the courts in very high regard. Some people don't hold the legislature in very high regard, and I think if the public were choosing which credible source to believe with regard to legislative ethics, I think they would choose the courts rather than an agency totally contained within the legislature. The legislative findings say that it's essential to the conduct of public business that legislators hold the respect and confidence of the people. The purpose goes on to ensure and preserve public confidence. And yet we repeal the common law and replace it with an entirely internal body which has advisory power to come back to the same body and deal with problems of ethics. What happens to the members of that ethics committee that may want to ask questions themselves? where's the credibility of that body with the public? Unless there is true credibility in that body, the kind of credibility that the judiciary has on some issues, I don't think that the commission or committee or whatever it's called is going to do us any good. I don't think the advisory opinions are going to be anything that we can rely on to go back to our constituents and say, this is okay, because three members of the Senate and three members of the House said it's okay. I don't believe the public's going to believe that, Mr. President.
Senator Ray.
It should be noted, Mr. President, and I would move the title change.
Question is, you asking to ask consent for title change? Without objection, title change has been noted. Question is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 257 pass the Senate? You may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll.
No, 13 yeas, 6 nays, 1 excused.
Senator Ray.
Effective date clause.
Question is, shall effective date clause be adopted? You may proceed to vote. If all members voted, all members voted, Secretary, close the roll.
Roll shows 18 yeas, 1 nay, 1 excused.
Takes us to unfinished business this afternoon. Senator Sackett.
May we revert to introductions?
Without objection, we revert to introductions.
I'd like to introduce a friend of mine who I think all of you probably know one way or another, seeing him in the newspaper, Bob Uchitel.
Are there announcement of committee meetings this morning, this afternoon? Finance Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Finance Committee will continue at 1:30 this afternoon, taking up the bills that were previously announced, Senate Bill 158, 79, and 55, and SR5. Also, I'd like to announce on the 24th of May at 8:30 a.m., the Finance Committee will take up House Bill 8, Judicial Retention of Elections.
The floor, Senator Sackett.
For unfinished business, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that I'd be excused from a call at the Senate for tomorrow. Personal business.
Without objection. Senator Victor Fisher.
Mr. President, State Affairs will have a committee meeting at 3 p.m. in the Butrovich Room on two measures, House Bill 128, Child Prostitution Penalties, House Joint Resolution Number 2, a constitutional amendment dealing with the length of legislative sessions.
Senator Bakes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. The Rules Committee will meet in the Belt Room today at 12:30. The agendas are on your desk. Also, for those of you who are interested, the subcommittee on Senate Bill 168, which has to do with APA rate structures, some technical amendments to the energy program for the state of Alaska, will meet today at 3:15 in the Senate Finance Committee Room. Legal staff from APA will be there, from our own Department of Law, from Legislative Affairs, from Senate Advisory, and the financing people from the bond market and the financing subcommittee of APA will also be there today. So that's 3:15 in Senate Finance.
Senator Moss.
Mr. President, Transportation Committee will meet in the Butcher Room at 1:30 to take up consideration of SCR 20, the Glen Alps Road Upgrading Realignment, SCR 25, the Abbott Road Upgrade, SCR 27, use of high-float emulsion asphalt. And at this time, Mr. President, I'd ask for unanimous consent to withdraw SR 6, use of high-float emulsion asphalt. It was replaced by SCR 27.
Objection. So ordered. Judiciary Chairman.
There will be a meeting of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee today at 4:30 p.m. in the House Finance Committee room. And the meeting is for the purpose of considering audits.
Senator Farenkamp.
Mr. President, House Resources will meet tomorrow at 3, taking up Senate Bill 219, an act relating to the process and permits by state agencies.
Are there further announcements? Senator Eliason.
Mr. President, the Labor and Commerce will meet at 1:30 in the belts, taking up Senate Bill 251, which is low-cost income housing, Senate Bill 252, appropriations transfer low-cost income housing. These two bills will be teleconference from Anchorage. We have testimony coming from Anchorage. The people are here
last 2 days ago, and they had the return, so we're taking teleconference only from those two particular people. HB 311, Workman's Comp, HB 16, premium increases auto insurance, HB 48, repeal insurance laws, and Senate Bill 177, freedom to choose providers on a medical, hospital, and health insurance policies.
Senator Halford.
Mr. President, I serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on committee substitute for Senate Bill 257.
Consideration has been noted. Are there items under special orders? Senator Lyons.
Mr. President, I did mean to move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute to House Bill 308 of the Labor and Commerce referral be waived to Judiciary.
Objection. Goes to Judiciary.
Mr. Senator. President, under special orders, I would move and ask unanimous consent for the privilege of the floor to make a few comments on today's actions.
There is no objection. You may.
Mr. President, I would like to commend everybody on the floor for their assistance in getting this bill passed. And although it has been reconsidered and possibly it will delay something, I know that's in good faith and that possibly there are one or two questions remaining, but I would just like to compliment everybody for a succinct debate and at times lively and at times entertaining and at times downright horrifying. But I would, because I can start and call myself a veteran now because I've been here over 2 years, so I would just like to compliment them once again and give them my congratulations on a fine effort today.
Senator Paul Fisher.
To have an excused absence from the call of the House on Saturday and Sunday, May 28th and 29th.
Objection. Without objection. Senator Ray.
No other business come before the Senate, Mr. President. I move we adjourn to 10 a.m. Friday.
Senate is adjourned.